Hi, I'm Mark Brewer. For 18 years, I ran the Michigan Democratic Party. These days, I'm a lawyer and consultant to progressive nonprofits, political parties, candidates, and ballot question committees.
I'm Jeff Timmer. I battled with Mark and the Democrats for decades as executive director of the Michigan GOP and while advising Republican candidates at the local, state, and national level. Now I'm a political nomad who's put what's best for the country above carrying water for my former political party.
This is a republic if you can keep it. Inside the backrooms of Michigan politics with veteran political strategists Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
Twitter is a weird and wild place where talking to strangers can be as dangerous as it is in the real world. But I'm grateful to have connected via Twitter with Ben, Brett, Jordy, and Midas Touch nearly a year ago when they were still civilians and in their political infancy. Welcome, my friends. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Well, let me ask the question, because there's going to be people listening to this that aren't familiar with what you've done and your viral sensation and some of the work. What got you interested in doing this, leaving like real world civilian jobs and saying, we want to go into this world and make a splash? What started all this?
Donald Trump being a horrible human being who tried to destroy our country was basically the start of it. And so we don't have a political background, but we all, you know, did our own things after, you know, leaving home in Long Island, New York, where we all grew up. I became a civil rights lawyer, went to Georgetown Law, became a partner at a law firm. Brett became a two-time Emmy Award-winning digital editor. He worked at The Ellen Show and ran their social media. Jordy became an award-winning marketing executive in New York. We always wanted to work together. And obviously, we could never have predicted the devastation that was caused by the pandemic, but specifically the pandemic X, the worst person imaginable to be there during a crisis like that. And you know, I think we took for granted our democracy even when Trump was in power for those first 2 years. And I use terms like in power because he ran it like a dictator. But seeing it at home in our living rooms, those press conferences every day, we really couldn't take it anymore. It got to the point where we had to stop going off of our text thread because it was just so dark and depressing. And we were like, let's just do something. So we started off doing blog style news, but then quickly found our stride with a video. Our first one was Are You Better Off? Which used Reagan's Are You Better Off and compared it to, you know, the current zeitgeist and used that reframing here. And that took off. We did another video called The Snake that did really good. Then we just started Googling, how do we kind of professionalize this and make this something other than just a hobby? And we decided that creating a political action committee, because we were influencing an election, was the most appropriate regulatory perspective and from a transparency perspective, the way to go. And then we just started doing video after video, and they all would get millions of views. We now have over a billion views, over 500 videos, and you know, did everything from videos to canvassing efforts to billboards to digital billboards to radio campaigns, 5 million text messages. I could list about 16 to 17 dozen programs that we've run and have Midas University chapters and high school chapters across the country. And so that's how it started. And that's where we are now.
It's like the Twitter meme, how it started, how it's going.
Did you ever imagine when you started this that, you know, here you are a billion impressions later, several million dollars raised, you know, the videos, I mean, everything that's happened and how you've branched out, you know, you started with a lot of the videos and Twitter and everything else like that. But then you were actually on the ground in Georgia, right? You were doing canvassing and everything else.
Yeah.
Did you ever imagine that you would get to this point?
We had very audacious goals from the beginning of what we thought this could be. And we always shot super high, you know, thinking that, well, if we didn't hit that, we'd hit somewhere near it or somewhere in between. But, you know, we never could have imagined the growth happening this quickly and to be where we are now. To be honest, when we started speaking, once Are You Better Off took off. We thought that was going to be like the thing that carried us through, you know, and was going to be this big deal. And we're like, oh man, we need merch around this. And you know what would be the coolest thing on the planet is if we had Are You Better Off billboards in just like a couple of the swing states. If we could just get one billboard up in a couple swing states, like this would be the coolest thing ever. Like what a huge success. And now looking back, it's like, you know, we had billboards in many states, you know, multiple different kinds of billboards, all different things. Billboards that echoed our TV campaigns and our mailing campaigns and our grassroots campaigns on the ground. We just were able to ultimately do so much because there was a void that we ended up filling out there, especially coming from our side of being lifelong Democrats. There's a messaging issue frequently in the past from the Democratic side. And I think we helped fill that void. And I think that's why people kind of took to our movement, and especially us being these political outsiders who had never done this before and people who are just really pissed off at what was going on, to be frank.
Well, that's a great point, Brett, because, you know, traditionally, and look, I was party chair in Michigan for 18 years, been in politics all my life. Traditionally, somebody would set up a super PAC and say, oh, we got to hire some consultants. We got to do some polling to figure out our message. It doesn't sound like you guys ever did that.
No, in fact,
what was the key?
We approached a lot of people initially just for advice, like what is the best framework to grow Midas Touch to be as successful as possible. And there were so many people who've been in the business along the way that tried, they had good intentions, but they tried everything they could to dissuade us from creating a political action committee. And they were more like, you know what, why don't you make videos for my organization? You know, why don't you make videos for this organization? It's going to take you 2 to 3 election cycles before anybody even knows who you are or your name, if you're lucky, you know? And so we got so much of that coming at us, and we just constantly said, nope, nope, nope. We had some people say, you know what, like these videos are good, but some of them are a little too hard hitting. Maybe if you tested them and did X, Y, and Z. And we were like, nope, you know, but we took good advice along the way, but we had plenty of bad advice coming at us also that we had to recognize.
The problem if you tested though with Trump is the next scandal happens the next day. And if he's not called for the one, by the time you would test, you'd be a week out or 7 days out, and he would do 5 horrible things. So our whole strategy was 2 hours after he would do the thing, we would get at him right away, and boom, we would do the rapid response, which was Brett adding those daytime Emmy award winning skills where you cut the video right away, because it airs in 2 hours. And that was the style that we deployed here, which I don't think really had been done so rapid response like that.
Yeah, it was really that rapid response style that we sort of built the Midas Touch. And Brett, you brought back a really funny point though. I remember when we were taking an early meeting, like in the beginning stages, we had a few people be like, Midas Touch, like, I don't get that. You guys need to change that name if you ever want to be anything or do anything.
Yeah, you should be the I Hate Trump PAC 2021. You know, that was like all the suggestions we got. No.
But to Brett's point though, we did take good advice along the way. And I think that was a huge impact or played a huge role in our growth as well.
I think you put Ben to work because if I see there's a trademark, you've trademarked that. Now, right?
Of course.
They put me to work. We need a whole law firm at this point to deal with everyone who's threatened to sue Midas Touch. And so I do Midas Touch for free, and I've been one of the co-founders, do all the work for free. But I don't know. And second thought, I kind of am like, I didn't think we were going to be, you know, I think when you're trying to take down a dictator, there's going to be a lot of hate that that comes your way.
You know, watching last year, I mean, because really it's been just over a year since you launched this. And, you know, most people, when the pandemic started and lockdowns happened, you know, they started to do, I haven't had a haircut and I got fat. And, you know, you guys went out and have this burgeoning media empire. You know, it's like you seem to have been a little more productive than a lot of people were during the pandemic. But, you know, I get where you're coming from. And had you talked to somebody like me who's been in politics for decades, or Mark, you know, a year ago, we probably would have been of the, you know, you can't do this advice, just because, you know, this isn't the way you do it. But one of the things I've really learned, you know, an old dog learning new tricks, is if you're willing to be a disruptor, you can get some things done. And, you know, what we were doing at Lincoln Project is in a lot of ways what you guys were doing, although, you know, different profiles and backgrounds. We came from the Republican campaign world, but just said, get, and we just threw it all to the wind, and you know, started just who's going to get pissed off about this? Good, let's do it again. You know, it wasn't trying to keep people happy. It was trying to achieve something bigger than ourselves, in doing what we could in our lane, and that was to, like you say, take down a dictator, prevent authoritarianism, and it's not hyperbole to say that.
No, and I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, Lincoln connected. This is one of the same reasons why Midas connected in that way. It's that what we were talking about earlier with typical Democratic messaging, not being hard-hitting like that and not really going for the jugular. And that's what Lincoln filled in. And I would say you guys are kind of the outsiders on the inside. We're like the outsiders on the outside. And I feel like, you know, that's why both these things take off. And I remember early on when we released some of these videos and on Twitter, you know, you'd see Huffington Post or whomever, they would write stuff like Lincoln Project and Midas Touch release new ads. And I'd be like, how crazy is it that they're just put our name next to these people who have been in politics their whole lives, all of a sudden Midas Touch and Lincoln Project? Like, that's insane. What is going on?
It was something to watch. And you know, I think nobody can claim to, you know, we did it. It was a collective effort. Everybody played a part, and had everybody not done what they did, look how close this election was when it should never have been. But it took everybody lifting and doing their part. It took the institutional Democrats and the organizations on the left. It took building a broad coalition that included people on the right, like John Kasich and Christy Todd Whitman, and you know, people like us who were just fed up with the Republican Party and were willing to be a lot more bold than, you know, some of those those politicians. But it also took people stepping up who didn't have the ties in the political world, who looked around them and said, "We don't want to live in this country if it's going to be like this." And you guys inspired, right, you know, so many young people. You know, you certainly had a progressive lane, but I think your fans kind of transcend the political spectrum. And I saw a lot of, yep, of people who I came to know their backgrounds just from Twitter, you know, suburban moms who've been Republicans for a long time, who are suddenly have, yep, you know, Midas in their Twitter handle. And, you know,
how cool is that, by the way?
Well, I mean, you have a lot of fans here in my household, but that's because I have a lot of kids, and my wife loves you guys. So, I know we're not alone. It's been something to behold and watch.
Jeff, I have to say before we go any further, you and your wife are my favorite Twitter followers, like the absolute best.
It's funny how that came to be. For like years, she would, you know, like, hate, you're spending too much time on Twitter, you know, I need money. but then she figured you can't beat them, join them. And she's pretty damn funny.
The tables turned.
That's a great approach.
And no, so now our conversation has boiled down to, have you seen what I tweeted lately? Did you like my last tweet? Did you retweet me?
That's classic. That's so funny.
Well, but you know, Jeff's absolutely right. You know, I've been doing Michigan politics since the late 70s. And right after Trump got elected, I'd be going to party meetings, extraordinary turnout. You never saw crowds like that before. And it continued for the whole 4 years, and lots of new faces of all ages, all backgrounds. And it was just, you know, we had Indivisible form up. The party grew dramatically in terms of membership. It was really quite amazing to watch, all motivated the same way you guys are motivated by watching this guy destroy our country.
Yeah. The broad coalition that you're speaking about, I mean, I think if you look at this election by the Electoral College, it wasn't won by the biggest of margins, electorally speaking. You know, there's, and it's in, I think, the tens of thousands of votes between the main swing states. And so I think if you remove a Lincoln Project, if you remove a Midas Touch, if you remove a Stacey Abrams, if you remove, you know, the Republicans who voted for Biden, if you remove the progressives who joined, you know, this tent, remove any one of those and you're in trouble. And that's why I think everybody played such a pivotal role, and nobody could on their own take credit and say, yeah, I did that, that was us. But I think everybody played an essential part. And I think, you know, the respect has to be spread out amongst all these groups who came together at an existential time for our country and stood up for democracy.
And here's the thing, people are suffering. People have problems and they need help. And Trump was able to reach them with lies and with hate.
And, you know, our approach was we have to be cheerleaders for democracy too. And we have to really champion pro-democracy, which I just think both parties and particularly the Democrats just took it for granted that because if you structure policies in a way that you think are going to be helpful to people, but you don't actually talk to them and you don't talk to them how they talk to people, you know, and if you just talk to them with your thumb up like this and say, da, 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 that you're not actually getting the message. They're not listening. They're tuning you out. And so our whole brand of, you know, people have families, they have brothers who have brother banter, you know, and we hope that that could kind of open you up to seeing that this is real and we have emotions. And then when we have it, you know, in our living room, we can start saying, all right, now that QAnon stuff is kind of crazy. Don't you want better infrastructure, you know, or that Melania and Donald and Ivanka thing? Like, come on, that's some wacky stuff. Or Jewish space lasers? Come on, don't we want more vaccines?
I totally believe those are real.
Yeah, I'm hiding them in the closet in here. Don't tell anybody, Jeff.
Ben, you're absolutely right. Democrats, we're infamous for this. We have big platforms, right? Long policy papers that nobody reads, that doesn't appeal to anybody, because we don't talk about values, which I think is where you guys connected with folks, the values and you know, talking to folks in everyday language.
And that's why it was important that people got to know who we are, and we really wanted to open up our, you know, be very vulnerable and show people about our families, about our relationships, you know, with each other and outside of Midas Touch, because that emotional connection in politics is something that was exploited by Trump to lie to people. And so bringing them in and then having these conversations was probably the most important decision we made, was in addition to becoming a political action committee, though, was, all right, we need to be front and center. We know there's going to be hate and death threats and criticism, and we're not going to be as private as we used to be. But if we don't stand in front and say this is who we are, then no one's going to really relate to it and get it.
And when we first started Midas, we all kind of hid behind the account for a little bit. It was like that Spider-Man meme when someone would ask, hey, who's running Midas Touch? And I know it's like you and your brothers, but like, who's doing that? And we'd all sort of point at each other. Oh, that's Brett's thing. Oh, no, that's Ben's thing. Oh, no, that's Jordan's thing.
This was when we were still a blog and we were still writing like, news articles.
And then it was that shift and we're like, okay, if we want to make a real impact, just like Ben was saying, we have to open up and let people see who we are.
Yeah, well, it was late into, you know, communicating behind the scenes. I remember DMing back and forth, you know, with you on the Midas account, Brett. And I thought it was you, but I said, okay, who exactly am I talking with here? You know, I mean, this is probably August. You know, we'd been talking for months. I don't even know which one of you I'm talking to. So yeah, I experienced that myself.
Yeah, and we were talking about this before the show, but it's funny how many people I've met and how many people we've met over this past year in this process. Probably have met more people over Twitter in the past 12 months than I have in the past 12 years. And oddly enough, have never seen most of them face-to-face, Zoom or otherwise, and definitely have not seen anybody person-to-person. And it's just so funny how this pandemic has brought me closer to so many, and us closer to so many people, but at the same time, we still have not actually met so many people.
Yeah, I figured out that a lot of people I've been friends and family with my entire life, you know, who represented my Facebook, I really don't want a lot to do with those people.
Absolutely. I never go on Facebook ever.
Was in my judgment over my life. So,
and know, one thing Trump did do was expose them all. So right. you now know who all those people are. That's for sure.
Mark and Jeff will be back after these messages.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, federal, state, and local issues. Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, and local governments across the state. When it comes to measuring voter opinions, Epic MRA has been known as the go-to Michigan pollster for over 25 years. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
The Michigan Polycast,
It's been called one of Michigan's top political podcasts by Hourly Detroit.
Each week, longtime political junkies Christine Barry and Walt Sorg offer news and views on Michigan politics and policy, as well as national issues impacting our pleasant peninsulas. And they are joined by some of the state's biggest names from government, politics, academia, and nonprofit groups, with an in-depth look at those issues.
Subscribe now to the Michigan Polycast, online at www.michiganpolycast.com.
Now, back to A Republic If You Can Keep It, with our guests, Brett, Jordan, and Brad Melius, creators of the Midas Touch Pack.
So, you know, you guys have built this great community, you know, in a wide variety of ways, online and otherwise, donors and everything else like that. Trump is gone, at least for the moment. Trumpism is still with us and still a real serious problem. So what's next? I mean, I've seen you've done material on Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and so forth. With the boogeyman gone, at least for the moment, what do you do with this great thing that you've created?
We want to make the GQP, and that's what we call it, a marginalized fringe party. We know we can't fully eradicate it in its entirety, but that Marjorie Taylor Greene strain, that Bobert strain, you know, that needs to be marginalized, and we need to show that that can't be the face of a major American political party. And if that means the party just doesn't exist anymore, so be it. But we need to keep exposing that. The reality is that that's what the party's become when you have, what's her name, who's the head of the GOP, Corona or Rona?
Rona, actually, from Michigan.
You know, and her kowtowing to Trump, saying Trump's the leader of the party. This is just embarrassing. And part of what we're also doing is just being like, these are just embarrassing, despite, yeah, they're fascist and they're hateful, but they're just weird, embarrassing, reject people who shouldn't be running anything, you know, yet alone a government. And if you hang with them, we're just going to assume that you're that crazy. And so all of our videos and kind of messaging now is making those connections and trying to further marginalize that group of people. And again, I don't think we can eradicate it, but that's what we're doing now. And obviously, as things gear back up for 2022, 2024, we have a great system in place now. We can turn the machinery on and start doing videos, you know, every day if we want to. Our podcast platform has become a huge podcast platform. But what we're really focusing on too, as things open up, are building real communities now that can be activated. And that's what we want to do in advance of 2022. So the university chapters, the high school chapters, and we've even been talking about having regional and local chapters, you know, as well, of just people who meet up, maybe even if it's just once a month at a restaurant, and just do something good for the community. Because all those people at a very local level can be activated. That's how we sent in 4 days, 5 million text messages, was because the people who are supportive of Midas Touch, they didn't do anything that day but send text messages. And that's just real authentic connections with people.
There's certainly going to be a lot of work to do. And Jeff and I see this all the time. There's so many Trump wannabes, not just at the state level here in Michigan. I'm sure it's true also in the country, but down to the local level. People are emulating him. They're modeling themselves on him because they think that's the key to political success. Yeah. So you're going to have your hands full, as will the rest of us, trying to deal with that for the next several years, I'm afraid.
And all those wannabes are even dumber and crazier and meaner than he is. You're right. They're so damn weird. I mean, you would think authoritarianism sounds like something we should be afraid of. But when you see these authoritarians, they're just kooks.
Yeah, they're totally wacky.
You shouldn't underestimate how dangerous they are. But I look at them and say, how do they do that? Why does anybody listen to what they say?
When you get to LaPierre from the NRA, oh, yeah. it's like you got two yachts in the Bahamas, and you know it's all this Ponzi scheming, fraudulent, weird stuff. You know, they're either. Yeah, I won't even go. I was going to say they're either like hiding Gates things or hiding financial fraud schemes or whatever, but there's something there that they're compensating for to act this crazy publicly, because it's all projection of them behind the scenes having real mental issues, mental health issues.
And, you know, when you have some visibility and some success, there's kind of the institutional actors that have jealousy, whose I guess, influence you might be threatening, people who feel insecure. You know, they look at the success, you know, people who've been in this their whole lives. I think we've had some of these conversations online and on the phone and whatnot, yeah, where the Lincoln Project and you, I think, experienced some of the same kind of all of a sudden oppo dumps going into the press. Hey, you know, you might want to look at this, look into their spending, look at what's going on. And I know that, you know, you guys experienced that recent piece in Rolling Stone, but I thought what Rolling Stone thought was a hit job and are going to be just a kind of a drive-by of you guys. You got out in front, jumped on the story, took some of a good amount of the wind out of the sails by kind of, again, throw all the caution to the wind. You know, you get out there, tell your story first, make them pay for it. There was that hashtag boycott Rolling Stone or whatever it was going on. You had a good share of the resistance left Twitter, you know, jump into your defense before anybody had read a damn thing. So that it was
pretty good. Huh?
Crisis communication. No, it was the same way. If you're advising and working in the communications shop at a company, this is what you would advise them to get out and get your spin on the story, take your lumps, tell the truth. You did all that, but you made them, you took a pound of flesh from them as they were trying to exact, one from you.
I'll let Ben tell the story, cause he's really good at kind of recounting what happened there. But I will say, if we were in any way worried about certain, you know, truths coming out that would be bad for us, it would be the world's dumbest strategy on the planet to make such a stink about this article and to draw so much attention to it. But because we knew that it was just a straight up hatchet job and that they were trying to make issues out of either just non-issues or literally inventing things, just making things up that didn't exist. And some of the things are really on the level of border on QAnon insanity conspiracy theories that they were making up with us. But because we just knew how silly it was, that's why we decided to get out in front of it and answered all the questions publicly before they would write the piece. And I'll let Ben tell the rest of it, but that's my take.
Growing up, you know, you think Rolling Stones, like one day that'd be a dream to be in Rolling Stones 30 years ago when I'm growing up. And little do I know that it's actually like $200 million is invested into the parent company by the government of Saudi Arabia, and that it's actually not the Rolling Stones that we thought it was ever going to be. But I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know if they're not even against the concept of money. So like of people getting paid so much as like the concept of currency in general, because to run an operation, you have to like genuinely pay things to do things. You have to make legitimate expenditures for things to happen. And like, here's an organization that like I took a personal affront to it because I literally made $0 off the thing and worked at it full time. You know, specifically because I wanted to sacrifice, you know, and make an important position that I'm fighting for this country. And you're talking about like he's coming at us. We're saying like, you know, your entire overhead to run the entire operation for like 10 employees, the main consultant, everything, $385,000, which to me is like the most efficient number imaginable. How could you possibly do that? Or coming after me for saying it was $5 a door for canvassing efforts in Georgia, and then comparing it to canvassing efforts 3 years before that in Wisconsin, and saying that our efforts during a global pandemic was too expensive per door compared to a failed canvassing effort years before a global pandemic
It's first of all, we lost then. Second of all, there wasn't a global pandemic. It's not even apples to oranges. It's like apples to like motorcycles. What you're comparing is not even in the same realm. And no matter how many times we would even, you know, we would answer every question. We sat down with the guy for over an hour. He actually cut off the conversation. We sat down with him in December. And for all intents and purposes, we were like, oh, this is going to be a fantastic piece. And even if it wasn't, we're always happy to answer questions. We're not afraid of hard questions. It's when the quote unquote hard questions become accusations. And ultimately the breaking point at the end was when he said, he gave us 48 hours and said, we are publishing these things. We need your response within 48 hours. And they were not questions. They were accusations saying that you claimed, you know, you grossly overspent on paying $5 per door for your door knockers. And I was like, by what metric are you talking about? We got a million proposals. This was the cheapest. We paid everybody a living wage. We provided everybody with PPE. Like, what are you even talking about? You grossly overcharged. You said that your ads were helping. You spent over $1.4 million on TV ads to help Democrats. But because it didn't meet the Nielsen GRP metric of 1,000 GRPs per ad, you lied to your donors. And we were like, what are you talking? So you didn't actually help Democrats. We were like, what are you talking about? What outdated metrics are you using here that you're going by GRPs and Nielsen and whatnot? Like, do you not understand the power of the movement and of the power of earned media and the power of having a TV ad, which is then reciprocated in a billboard, which is then reciprocated in $500,000 mail program, and door knockers that come to those same people's doors and reiterating that message like a movie campaign every single day? And that, you know, they didn't want to listen, so we had to pull the trigger on.
I brought that up just because the style that you employed in your response to that showed this same kind of no boundaries, thinking outside the box, disruptor attitude to the response. It was like, you know, throw caution to the wind and, you know, sock these guys in the mouth.
Well, if their thesis was Midas Touch was ineffective and not influential. And I think when we got the number one trend in the country, boycott Rolling Stone, they knew really quickly that their article had to change from that being the claim of the article to the article being about Midas Touch attacked me. the whole article just became.
Yeah, the article was about how we attacked them. Then they were trying to make up lies, which was the reason.
Yeah, and they were like, we asked hard questions and things got strange. It's like, no, you didn't ask hard questions and things got strange. We answered your quote unquote hard questions for 5 months. And then you gave us an ultimatum that you were going to print. The worst of them, really, I'll tell you offline, like QAnon level, just bonkers, wild, wild stuff. But we were like, oh, like, okay, if you're going to print that, yeah, we're going to sue you because it's so off base. And then they're like, oh, they're Trumpian. They're threatening to sue us. It's like, yeah, if you're going to print, like, if I printed the horrible things about you that weren't true, I think you'd be pretty upset about it. And we've run an incredible organization and have built a grassroots movement of people contributing an average of $25 at a time. Our median donation was $20.21 for the election. You know, over $5 million raised in incredible grassroots support, ground game mail. When you add up everything, the Midas Mighty community, I mean, we have nothing but, you know, we are so proud of this movement and we're happy to talk about it for hours on end. But don't mischaracterize, you know, what we built and what we're trying to do.
Well, it's been great watching. It's been great, you know, working alongside with you in the effort to save democracy. You know, Mark and I he mentioned when we started off here, you know, we've been adversaries and on different sides of the political spectrum for a long time, but over these last couple of years have found we have a lot more in common than we have different. And that's the belief in democracy. We, you know, we can go back to winning elections or arguing about marginal tax rates, you know, someday when, right. When we're all safe, you know, exactly. Safe authoritarianism and these QAnon kooks.
And I know we could talk for hours, but unfortunately our time is up for this week.
What?
So I really want to thank you guys for joining us, telling us your story and about your future plans. And, you know, I want to wish you the best of luck. And hopefully we'll get back together at some point in the future and talk more about what the Midas Touch is up to.
That'd be great.
Thank you. We're so humbled for all your support that you've given us over the past year and for all the support of your listeners. We really appreciate it.
It's great seeing you guys. Let's come up with a hashtag and get it trending.
Ooh, now that's a challenge.
I love how you do that. You'll just be like, let's get this trending, and it's number one.
Challenge accepted.
All right. Let me know what it is, and we'll
get it. Sounds great.
All right, guys, take care. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Good to meet you.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this week. Our thanks to Ben, Brett, and Jordy Micellis, and our humble congratulations to them for taking flight with grassroots activism.
We welcome your comments on our weekly adventures. Email us at arepublicpodcast@gmail.com and help us grow the tribe. Share the link to the podcast on your social media. Make us as big as the Midas Touch.
If the Republic is still standing in a week, we'll be back. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, arepublicpodcast.com. A Republic If You Can Keep It with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.